Lime, duh. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wah, 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 wah. Let's do it again, baby. Hello. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Welcome to the Comedians of Wrestling podcast, the podcast where comedians dissect the wrestling to an unhealthy degree. I am your host, the host with the most viral stand-up about professional wrestling, Dan Black, a.k.a. Donsky Blackamora, a.k.a. Donnie Wrestling. A.K.A. Donnie Capri from the time I went to Italy.
I should have known better, dude.
I loathe myself. Burn it
down! A.K.A. the modern day goof and spoof. Ha, Raja.
No more, Mr. Nice Jew.
Coming at you like Cleopatra, baby, baby. Gubba, gubba, wee.
Gubba, gubba, wee. Yeah, gubba, yeah. Gubba, gubba, gubba,
yeah, yeah.
Gubba, gubba, wee. Yeah, gubba, yeah. Gubba, gubba, yeah. Gubba, gubba, gubba.
This girl, she's mine. And she's mine. What up, jabroniacs? We are back in action for your satisfaction with all of our spicy, spicy, muy caliente wrestling reactions. Okay. All right. And we got an amazing guest on the show today. I sat down via Zoom with sweet, sweet Peter Rosenberg of the Cheap Heat Podcast, ESPN, WWE Network, WWE pre-shows. You know the guy. We had an awesome conversation about wrestling. Before we get into that interview this week, I just want to say there's only one way to support the show, patreon.com/comediansofwrestling. Get access to all of our bonus content, bonus episodes. We got years of archives. If you're sitting around during the quarantine and you want to listen to some awesome shit, go over there, support the podcast. We are grassroots. So go do it. And if you're a member of the Cow Movie Club, which is a level of patronage, you get our weekly review of a movie with a professional wrestler in it. This week, we talked about a movie starring the Ravishing Russian Lana, a.k.a. CJ Perry. It's her shoot name. A movie called that she executive produced, also starring Rusev Putria, Rusev Machka, called Another Version of You, available right now on Amazon Prime. Check it out. We actually really enjoyed this movie. Spoiler alert. Go check out that. Also, next Monday for Cow Movie Club, our movie chosen by Petroniak, Emily Scott, will be Roadhouse, starring Terry Funk. I think you can watch that on Tubi. There's a ton of other ways to watch that for free. Okay, and before we get into my interview with Peter Rosenberg, we have a new thing. If you rate this podcast 5 stars in Apple Podcasts and leave a review of a wrestler who has become one of your guys, I will give you a shout out on the podcast and congratulate you for having a new guy. So remember, in your comments, leave your name, because your Apple name will pop up. So some of you, I don't know your actual names, but I'm going to give you a shout out from your via your avatar name. So, all right. Anyway, Sway 14, Orange Cassidy's one of your guys. Congratulations for having a new guy on the bench. That's huge. And Sean, 8241, Ray Phoenix, one of your guys. Congratulations. Wow. This is huge fireworks for you. Christian Finns, Tegan Knox, one of your guys. You also called me a crap cow champion, and you told me the Paperboy is coming. So that might be your gimmick, the Paperboy. Well, Christian, congratulations on Tegan Knox, one of your guys. PM McSweeney, Darby Allin, one of your guys. Congratulations, man. JFS Karp, Finn Balor is one of your guys. Congratulations. And Mr. Money in the Dank, the Iconics are one of your guys.
Oh, a little bit of the bubbly.
Baby! All right. right. So congratulations on all you having new guys. And thank you for the 5-star review. If you want a shout out for wrestlers who are one of your guys, leave us a message in, leave us a 5-star review in Apple Podcasts and in the description. Write who's one of your guys and write your name. Anyway, let's talk to Peter Rosenberg. Okay, everyone, I am excited to have on the Cal Podcast. I feel like a long time coming, the collabo between the Comedians of Wrestling Podcast and the Cheap Heat Podcast. You know this guy from literally everywhere. WWE, the Yes Network, Hot 97. I mean, the dude's all over the place. ESPN. I don't even want to I don't want to miss one of your beautiful credits. Mr. Sweet, Sweet Peter Rosenberg in the house. Hello.
Dude, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm pumped. I'm pumped to have
first
you.
First time I've seen you on Zoom. First time I've seen you since the Mania show.
Since Calmania too. You had a great time down at Tampa, right?
I was so, dude.
It was awesome.
Honestly, like, yeah, I mean, it was an exciting year for me because being back with the company, I was like super excited to be back with WWE. Yeah. But then like the icing on the cake was getting to do Calmania too. It was just awesome.
Yeah.
Like seeing everybody, and I couldn't believe some of the people that showed up who I didn't expect. It was it was awesome.
Al Snow showed up with Head.
By the way, did I tell you
that
afterwards I posted a picture of us after the show, and Becky Lynch commented on the picture about how good I looked in the Becky Lynch wig?
Oh, so we're acknowledging that you wore the Becky Lynch wig. I didn't want to bring it up.
I heard
maybe you were going for a new look.
No, people told me that you're saying that. No, I put it on my stories, and she replied. She DM'd me back after I posted the story and was like, "This looks amazing. Oh, my God, you're like me." I was like, wow.
Wow, that's really cool. Oh, I'm glad, because I thought maybe, you know, you wanted to have some luscious locks and maybe go just for a really bold statement, because we didn't talk about it. You kind of showed up with
that's true.
Like this with it, and you brushed it out of your
shimmer.
Eye.
Yeah. That's part of my thing that I do, though, when I'm trying to, like, get in that zone, you know, of being the man. I just have that little moment where I kind of, like, flick my hair or whatever. But, no, I'm not – it's – I don't do it often. But I'll do it again at Calmania 3 in LA. Yeah. It's going to be lit.
Well, Calmania, and I thought, and we had a tense moment there during Calmania 2. I don't think we should get into it now, but we did have a moment there where I thought maybe we weren't seeing eye to eye during my championship match. But I think we should put that aside for now.
100%. That was miscommunication, and it happens between the greats. And you know, I thought for a second I wasn't exactly sure where your head was at. You weren't sure where I was at, but here we are now, and I think it's behind us, water under the bridge.
Yeah, I think so. I don't even think – I'm sorry I even brought it up. I was unprofessional. I'll cut that out. But
okay.
Rosenberg, here's what – I feel like you are on kind of like – I consider you on the front lines of fighting the wrestling stigma, you know? because it's a real thing, you know, whether we want – there's – I had this like – the other day, you know, I was wearing a wrestling shirt, and you think with all the great stuff that I looked great. I got a mark out all the time, you know, but by the way, you're wearing a beautiful Bret Hart shirt there.
Yeah, I literally am wearing a wrestling shirt 24 hours a day.
You just called me a loser.
I wear one since quarantine. I pre-quarantine on my radio show on ESPN. I was wearing, like, I started dressing up finally and, like, being a grown man. I'm 40 years old.
Yeah.
Started wearing suits all the time, jackets. And then when we went to quarantine, I just do vintage wrestling tee every single day. So, yes, to make a long story short, I definitely live on the front lines. Correct.
Absolutely. I did notice the first time you did wear a suit. I think it was right when you came back for your first pay-per-view. What was that, Stomping Ground or something? No, it was after that.
I came back for Mania.
That was your first time back, Mania?
Yeah,
I thought you did something before that. I thought you did TakeOver.
No. Sorry. You're right. I lied. Elimination Chamber.
Elimination Chamber. Absolutely.
The Chamber Elimination.
Yes, yeah, the Chamber of Elimination. You were at the Chamber. Right. You don't even remember that. That was in Philly, man. That was like when the shit was going down. Were you nervous?
It was like – so that's an interesting day because it was the Sunday before the Wednesday where everything happened.
Yeah.
So that following Wednesday was Rudy Gobert and the NBA shutting down right. and the world changing. And this was a live event 3 days before. So there was a lot of sanitizer. There are always a lot of sanitizer, but right. people were definitely active on it. And there were definitely conversations about, are we fist bumping? Are we shaking hands? Yeah. But I directly remember shaking hands with people. Like right. I was still shaking hands. And then I would like try to sanitize quickly.
Yeah.
But like people were still shaking hands, and like in catering, everyone's still sitting very close. Like it wasn't really happening yet. Like it was
also
just,
shaking hands is a huge part of wrestling culture, right? So
oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
So we were to show up on your first day back and then refuse to shake people's hands.
Yeah.
You get the not Young Bucks exactly, treatment.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very interesting to think about that day. And like think about this. When the night ended, I like celebrated by I left during the pay-per-view because Philly's a drive. So I didn't stay there because I was going to work the next day.
Right.
So I just got in the car like, you know, shortly after the pay-per-view started and was going to come home. And I was like, you know what? I'm down like 20 pounds. I just worked my first pay-per-view back. I'm going to stop and grab a fucking cheesesteak is what I'm going to do. And I just stopped like at a spot, like right in the hood, right nearby the stadium. Cause I couldn't find one of the places I wanted to that was open. So I wanted to go to an Ishka Bibbles or something that I really messed with or like Pat's, but I couldn't. Right. So I just went to a local spot and dude, I just grabbed a cheesesteak and sat outside on a bench watching the pay-per-view on my phone. Like all things that right now would just be like, yeah, going and sitting on a random bench with other people around to eat a meal is just not something you picture doing anymore.
Yeah. I had a moment. I had to pee really bad, so I pulled over to McDonald's right as this was going down, right in the beginning, like before that, right before that Wednesday. And I pulled in. I was like, all right, I'm just going to risk my life to go take a piss right now. And I go in there at McDonald's. People are just dining casually, 80-year-old people. And I was like, wow, I'm living in a whole different world than these people. It was such an interesting time. But anyway, I'm saying you're on the front lines of
– Yep.
Like I think – I think that especially because you're in the sports world where I think there's a lot of hatreds towards pro wrestling, not mm-hmm. everyone. My question to you is like, what is it like being a wrestling guy in the sports world? Because like for me, I'm a theater guy who likes wrestling, right? You know,
right.
So I come from the theater side of it, but I'm like a bro and I'm like, my machismo bullshit where I'm like, oh, well, this is perfectly combines my two worlds. I could still be a man, but also be a caped theater boy.
So, yeah, it's actually reverse.
Right.
Because being into wrestling puts you on, like, the manly side of theater.
Absolutely.
Me being into wrestling puts me, in theory, onto, like, the bitchy side of sports.
So I'm saying you're a hero. This is what I'm saying.
That's a great point. That's a really great point. I am a hero. You know, I don't know. It's gotten more acceptable in all of my worlds over the last 10 years.
Right.
Which if anyone listens to Cheap Heat knows, won't be surprised. I credit myself for most of that. But
yeah,
you know, like I really aggressively was like, listen, I've always been into things that make me different. I think that's I'm honest with myself about that's why I'm into it. Like a lot of why I was into hip hop was because it was different. Like at the time in the late 80s, being where I lived and what I looked like and being super into hip hop was my calling card. It was great. And then, you know, time went on and like I was always a Mike Tyson fan, but I became like Tyson obsessed around the time he was just completely persona non grata.
Right.
Like I just became like the biggest Tyson defender. You don't understand him. You don't know his history, blah, 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 blah. I like to defend the things that I'm passionate about, I think.
Right.
And so that's part of the wrestling thing. But as time's gone on, no, I mean, honestly, these days, let's keep it real. Like I work at ESPN. Mm-hmm. We are like so at times, and hip hop too, it just like appears to be so on the dick of wrestling like regularly that it's like, me getting to be a guy who the timing's great because I'm now is like official.
Right.
So since I'm like official, it's kind of hard. I don't even look just like wrestling fanboy anymore. It's like, oh no, he's actually like there. Like it's like what he does.
Right.
I kind of like feel I'm in a really good spot. You'll always get like the random haters, but in the sports world, but I don't agree with those same people on anything. These same people who hate me for wrestling, they hate me for my political beliefs. They hate that I'm on a black radio station as they see it in the morning. They hate anything that's not old-timey baseball. Like, right. They hate everything. So who gives a shit? Like, it doesn't really matter. So, no, I think by and large you get respect for it. And then so many athletes enjoy it. And, you know, so I still wear it as a badge of honor. Or maybe I'm delusional and they think I'm a big loser and I just don't care or notice.
Yeah. Well, I have the thing now where, like, if people are, like, want me to they haven't watched wrestling in a long time and they kind of want me to explain why it's good. I just get this point where, like, I have no patience for it. I'm just like, hey, you know, it's really great. You should check it out. And, like, that's the end of it. I don't need to sell anybody on pro wrestling. I'll just talk to people like you who get it, who see the light.
I'm not exactly like that. If someone asks because they're sincerely curious, I very much enjoy explaining.
Yeah, so I agree with curious, that. I had a conversation recently that was very much like that, where they were like, where I went on, we're all hanging out, having some drinks, and then I just went on a whole like tirade about why I think wrestling's great, and they were like, you know what? You just sold me on it. So yeah, I enjoy that too, but most of the time, you know.
Yeah, if they're annoying and not trying to be convinced, I'm not there for it. But like, if they are, and like, I was hanging out with someone recently, and she like used to watch as a kid, and had like the moments of like, oh, they're still around. And that's like so satisfying when someone's not remotely judgmental, but actually used to be into it. And then she had the most bizarre moment ever where like she had these gaps that I didn't understand. So like she popped super hard for the Hardys and Lita.
Yeah.
But did not remember Shawn and Bret. Right?
Yeah.
But Triple H, Stephanie, Hardys. And actually, you know what? If it's 2000, Sean's not back yet. So maybe she just is, it's pre-Sean coming back. So it was just completely a gap. But, and then Maven comes out. Okay.
Maven?
Maven comes out and she goes, yeah. Oh, I remember him. Didn't he like win the reality show?
Yeah, I was like,
oh my God. Yeah. Why, yes, he did.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there are different varying degrees of things that I can really enjoy when it comes to
Well,
that.
There is nothing better than, like, if my wife watches wrestling, the observations, she said, I could never think of that. I'm so ingrained in the product that I would never see it from that place, you know?
Yes, a woman's outsider perspective, no matter how long they're there seeing it, is still going to be different than us because, yeah, they're just not thinking about it in the same way. Any outsider, but I just don't spend time with men that often.
Well, all the time I try to explain to women how hot Randy Orton is, and they're always like, he's not.
I don't see it.
I don't see it. I'm like, what? This is the hottest guy in the world. What are you talking about? I would give my fucking leg to look like this guy. And you're like, yeah, no, he's gross. And I'm like, oh, all right, whatever. I mean,
what are you talking? You don't even know what good looking is if you don't think Randy Orton's a beautiful man. Look at him. He's physically perfect.
Yeah, that's what I always have. Well, that's interesting. So, you signed. I don't know what details you can go into, but you signed this deal with WWE, which is awesome. You had talk. You worked on Talking Smack, which I thought was one of the best shows on the WWE network. I know you felt very passionate about it as well, and also bring it to the table. Two great shows. Anything in the works to bring something like that back to the network that you can divulge?
Me, JBL, and Graves want to do Bring It to the Table. Yeah. I don't know if we will, but we've actively talked about it. We love it, and like the three of us get along great, and there's a real dynamic that's awesome of sort of like, they sort of push me around, but I also drive the show. So it balances really nicely. Just from a TV camaraderie standpoint, like I just enjoy that part of it. And I think we walk the line really nicely of, we say some real nuggets in there if you're listening without like burying the product. I hope it comes back. I mean, I know they're, I guess in a way they're trying something similar with the bump, like sort of,
yeah,
in like a roundabout sort of way. But that's really just a, you know, a bunch of people doing interviews and talking about the weekly product.
Right.
So it's not really the same thing.
No, because there was nothing like when that time when Kevin Owens came on and like just berated you on Talking Smack. That's like the old school wrestling moments that I miss, where you kind of just get the characters can come on and kind of just do their thing and find it.
It's unreal.
And so that's what I long for, is to have that those kind of moments back where you're doing the show. Someone's like, "Hey, you talking about me in character?" And
So when I would do those, they started having me do them after a little while. Like, I didn't do them at first.
Right.
And then at some point, I'd get to the building, and they'd be like, "Hey, you're going to be Talking Smack today, too." And I'd be like, "Okay, cool." And all we'd focus on the whole day is the show before, right? Which is funny, because I have so much more lifting to do in Talking Smack, because it's just Renee and myself. Whereas the pre-show, there's four people. Like, I don't really have that much I have to do.
Right.
Like, you know, you have your times, you make your points, you keep it moving. When it's just me and Renee, it's a lot more mic time. And we have literally no sort of script written out at all. Yeah,
it was great.
It's just like, here are the guests. We'd find out, like, an hour before who the guests were. And then Renee and I would meet at the table where we were set up to do it. And we would watch the end of the pay-per-view together, and we'd like come up with a couple ideas we wanted to do. The two of us didn't see the talent, and then the talent would walk in one at a time, and they would just do whatever they were doing. And half the time that was me just getting crushed by The Miz, crushed by Kevin Owens.
Yeah.
It was awesome. It was really fucking old school, like Tuesday Night Titans, just good shit.
It was good shit. I feel like this type brings me into my next point, where we live in this, like, in wrestling, we live in this, like, dirt sheet era, right? And so, you know, we have the internet and everything's being leaked and whatnot. And I've heard you say, why can't they keep more things under wraps? And we know Dipperstein lives a kayfabe lifestyle.
He does.
So my thought is that, like, a show like Talking Smack, where the wrestlers come on and do their thing, interests me way more than where they're going on backstage, where it's like, oh, we get to see behind the scenes. I want that also, but I want that more in, like, how the Taker doc is being done, as opposed to I want more of the wrestling shows to promote the actual stories and tie into stuff. Where are you at on that? Like, what's your preference?
That's a really interesting point, is that you'd rather the shows that are sort of within the universe.
I'm trying to be in the universe.
Just stay in the universe.
Yeah.
And then if you're going to give us docs that are fully behind the scenes,
love it.
We know we're leaving the universe and we're looking at the universe.
Right, like making the episode, Game of Thrones, when they did that, like, oh, here's how we did this battle. That's fine. Cool with that.
That's a really great way of putting it. And so you're saying backstage, for example, lives in the middle, and you're not getting quite either.
Who's it kind of for? You know, I mean, actually, I love all the talents on the show, and I do watch the show. But there is this thing where, you know, where I'm like, oh, you're in the middle of that storyline, so just keep doing it, and we'll talk about it later. You know what I mean?
I hear what you're saying. Yeah. And then if you're gonna have a guest on, have them start some shit with the people on the show.
Right. Anyway, I made this point already. Here's the deal. All right, let's chop it up about actual – let's mark out a little bit. So we have this expression on the show, like you have Mage, which is infectious. By the way, fun story. Dipperstein was talking to my wife at a party, maybe one of the first times they ever met, and my wife used a Jace at him. She said they were talking
about
some.
How did I not know
this? They were talking about some Hollywood bullshit, and she had just been like, "Yeah, you know, I don't know, I'm working there at Jace," something like that. And he came over to me immediately. It was like, "Your wife is so Midge. She just used a Jace at me."
And did she know? She wasn't doing it to pop him. It was organic,
no.
Or she was.
No, I just think that's what I'm saying is that Mage and Ajayce are those are serious catch.
No, it's real. They're real. They're real phrases. There's no doubt about it.
They're real. So one thing that we say on this show is I call wrestlers one of my guys. Okay.
Okay.
So. Yeah. I like to. This is a way we kind of define talent that you're feeling. That you're feeling that they're one of your guys, but it's separate, completely separate from booking, right? And also, you don't have to really like go into talking about their stats or how much TV time they get. It's just like that wrestler is just one of my guys, right? So, for example, a guy I've deemed one of my guys recently is Darby Allin, right? If you look at his record right now, it's not great, but
that's my guy, too.
Right. Yeah. He's one of your guys. Yeah. So I'm curious, do you have any wrestlers right now? It could be NXT, AEW, wherever. Any wrestlers right now who are either full-on one of your guys, you put them on the roster, they're on the bench, or on the one of my guys' watch list?
Well, okay. Listen, I think everybody who's ever listened to me talk about wrestling for more than an hour will not be surprised that the captain of my guys right now, full-blown captain, long overdue, is MVP, obviously.
MVP,
He's in a zone right now of just – he just came back and just totally defined why he was always one of my guys.
Right.
Because, like, you literally just – he literally, with a microphone, it's just whatever. It's so easy for him. The fact that AEW didn't run out and get him, it was such an opportunity lost – for them, in my opinion.
Right.
Could have done so much good there. But hey, you know what? I'm glad it didn't happen because he's very needed on Raw. Yeah.
Well, I thought like when they had him hosting the segments for Money in the Bank, I was like, I'm not that into this that much. But then now they paired him with Bobby and then instantly has made Bobby interesting.
Bobby, all of a sudden, for the first time since he came back, means something.
He's in the heavyweight. He has a title shot. You know, and you feel it, and he's given the full Nelson and MVPs. He makes Bobby feel more legit. It is true. There's a lot of power.
So
to that.
Fast,
right?
So fast, and like he, and I told him this the other day. I was like, I don't want to get in your head. You're doing what you're doing,
right?
But and who knows? Things could get messed up at any point. But when I watch MVP right now, I see a guy who, if things were to come back to normal and the groove comes back, you could see a guy who becomes like middle of his career, prime, probably the same age too.
Yeah.
Prime Bobby Heenan.
Right.
He could be commentary, manager, and occasionally matches where he gets his ass kicked.
Yeah.
He could do all of it. He could really be like, pardon the expression, the MVP of the entire show.
Right.
Like where you just utilize him in so many different ways. And so few people have all those skills.
Yeah, I mean, he's great on the mic. He's very comfortable. He's got a clear character. You know, I don't call it gimmick at this point, but he's got a clear vantage point. And also, yeah, like as he's get, I do think that him getting like older, I think this is kind of the sweet spot for him because they need more mic guys with character. You know,
and gravitas, right? Like he has. You know him enough to respect that in the ring he was once really good.
Right.
Like you, and not that he couldn't still be good, but his body's, you know, he's taken some mileage over the last decade. But like you know that he's a really good wrestler. He's had big matches with big people. And yeah, he has a vantage point. You get who he is. You know, it's funny. I remember the first time I ever saw MVP was right when he came up to the main roster. And I was at a SmackDown taping, probably in DC, because that's where I still lived there at the time.
Right.
And they brought him out in the crowd, and he sat like five seats away and was like doing the gimmick where they had him sitting in the crowd wearing his glasses. Like just,
like he's just got signed.
He's on his way. Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And I was booing the shit out of him. I was so into it. Like I was just – And then as the years went on, like, and I got to know him, obviously I root for him more on a personal level, but he never let me down. He's always been so damn good. Anyways, I would say from AEW immediately, Darby, I think is at who, how could he not be your guy?
He's exciting. He's such an exciting talent.
He's so exciting. And I'll tell you who's getting damn close to that.
Wow.
For me.
Let's see.
This may surprise some people. Sammy Guevara is right there. Like,
it's not going to surprise anyone, not my listeners. They adore him.
He is so mage, dude. He is, yeah. He's over as can be to me. Like, he is such a chicken shit, just douchebag heel.
Yeah.
Like, I just find him great.
He's just like an annoying teenage punk, but he's got a lot of a talent. And also, he's attaching himself to Jericho in a way. I kind of wish WWE would do this also with their legendary talents. Like, it's like, oh, well, now Sammy Guevara wore gear that looked like Jericho's gear, like the sparkly undies, you know? And you're like, oh, well, that's fine. He's under the tutelage of Jericho. So he can start doing the lion tamer as he starts coming up, and he can take it. Like, where an Aleister Black could attach himself to, like, a taker and could absorb some of his moveset. You can imagine Aleister just taking the old school, right? Like, something like that as these wrestlers age out. I think that's a great.
Yeah, I mean, where did Kane get the choke slam from? You know, where did
right.
It's a thing that you can do. But yeah, I just and then the way he bumps for everyone is so awesome. Like, he just I love when a bad guy can just get the shit beaten out of them and look great doing it. Yeah. Like, that's what they're there for. That's what makes them awesome, honestly.
And he's young, so it's a good time for he can get beat now because he's growing. So it doesn't hurt his career to take the L's. Like, getting hit with that – he got hit with that golf cart really hard.
Oh, my! The golf cart was amazing.
He got slammed with that thing. Crazy.
You know, I'd say in terms of younger talent at WWE, like, everyone knows, and at this point it's kind of cliched and like almost silly, but I'm not going to stop saying it just because there's more attention around her. But Rhea Ripley, from the second I saw her, I was just like, oh, she is a stud. Like, she is just going to be huge. And, you know, I had concerns about how quickly she was sort of given the opportunities. And it seems like now, because of everything that happened and because the Mania match wasn't able to be what it should have been,
it worked out really nice for her.
I think it'll end up slowing it down, and we'll get her rebuilt up again later. But she is, to me, just going to be like a multi-time champion. Same with Bel Air.
Yeah. Oh, Bel Air. Yeah, Bel Air is one of my guys. I'm a big Bel Air mark. I took so much heat for ripping on Rhea Ripley because I was like, not first of all, I've stood next to her before. She's massive. So in terms of size, I understand the appeal. She's got a great look. I did not feel like she was there yet to be wrestling Charlotte at WrestleMania, and I knew she was going to eat. She was had to eat a pin to Charlotte. There was no way around that. And then I just felt like her appearances, she was getting a lot of heat for being new, but I didn't feel like she had the charisma to really get there yet. So I was like, I think it's a little too soon for me. You know, she's following a little bit of what I call Full Sail heat. Sometimes it's like you're not totally ready to be in that big arena where you need to full. You know, it's a whole different skill set.
Yeah, I feel the same. I feel the exact same way.
So I think you're totally right. Everything's slowing down for her, but there's no doubt that she's going to be a huge star. She has. What does she not have? She's got the looks. She looks great.
Right. Her look is amazing. In ring, she's great. She's credible with anyone of any size. You know, like, she's one of those people that can really, like, if there's a smaller wrestler with her, she can work with her. But if she has to take on a Nia Jax or, you know, a bigger wrestler, she looks totally credible doing that. So, like, she's got all the tools. I'm trying to think of on Raw and SmackDown. Is there anyone right now? I mean, listen.
Well, if it pops up to you, you can just bring it on.
Seth is killing it, obviously. Seth's having one of the best moments of his career, in my opinion.
I want to run. I think Seth, you're saying he's having the best run of his career right now? I think I had this exact point that I wanted to run by you, which is that Seth is killing it with this Monday Night Messiah gimmick. I felt like he wasn't there yet, but I have so much faith in him because he's one of those wrestlers who's great at reinventing himself every time he does it. And I felt like he is really an example of someone who's really hurting from this shutdown. Mm-hmm. Because I think if we had the crowd, we could see fully how much this thing is working. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he's doing everything right. I had an idea that I thought was the best booking ever, which is that he starts doing curb stomp baptisms. Okay? I was like, this is the greatest booking. I really was like, this is the best idea ever. Can you imagine if, like, you want to join? Right now he's just doing handshakes, right? He kind of puts the glove out and then you join.
No. That's the best idea. You couldn't have had a better idea in your professional life than that idea.
Thank you. It's my number one greatest idea in the history of my entire life right now.
I'm telling you right now, I'm going to steal it now. And I'm going to say it on my podcast, and it might happen. I feel like a lot of times, a couple weeks after Cheap Heat says it, it'll happen.
Yeah, no, I think you should do that.
Baptism, it's incredible.
Yeah, and you have to beg for it, too. It's not like he just gives it to you.
And he might even be like, no, you're not ready. This isn't right. And they're like, please, I am ready. I am ready. It's incredible.
And you beg for it, and then after you get it, you're out for a while. But then when you come to, you're like just thanking him. You're kissing his feet. You know what I mean? It's so fucking good. But instead, what he's done is the handshake, and then he added the nice thing where it's more brutal, where he's gouging your eyes on the stairs.
Brutal in its own way. It's true. It's not a curb stomp. Doesn't have the same cachet.
No. But I give you permission to get this idea through because I want to see it. And
all right. Yeah, regardless, that's what wrestling ideas are. They just get stolen anyway, so it makes no difference.
Absolutely. I mean, every idea we say, they pops up, similar to you're saying. Like, our ideas always pop up, and you're like, was this idea that original, or?
Right. are they listening, or hold on? I'm not sure.
Yeah. Okay, so where are you at? Seth, he's firing on all cylinders. I love it. Where are you at on McIntyre's championship run so far?
This is why I didn't think he would win that match, because I thought it was ruined by the no crowd.
Yeah.
I thought he needed the momentum of that experience to sort of make this feel meaningful and like we're seeing something. To give someone their first opportunity in this setting, mm-hmm. and a guy who, while I would argue he's probably better on the mic than I think he gets credit for, I think he's physically capable on the mic. I don't think he's always had great things to say. It's not his strong suit. I mean, his strong suit's obviously his look.
Yeah.
The Claymore, you know, his general in-ring work is solid. Yeah. Like, that's what makes him a guy. And so I think that this time just does not benefit him. So it's like really hard. What do we compare this run to? I don't even know what to compare to. It started on the weirdest note ever. The one thing that got overlooked as one of the weirdest things that's happened in this entire period was that on the Raw after WrestleMania, they said last night after his match, once the show went off the air, Big Show came out and challenged him.
I know.
Instead of just making that the main event of Raw the night after, which, to be honest, is a very night after WrestleMania kind of thing to do.
It's perfection, Monday after Raw booking, main event. It's perfect.
It's like we haven't seen him in a long time, and you want to talk about a challenge for your new champion? He's taking on an icon, The Big Show, who just so happens to be promoting his new show on Netflix. Yeah. We're going to do that right now. But they went, it happened last night after Mania went off. I have never to this day understood why that happened. So it was already an auspicious sort of strange start to a title reign for me.
Yeah, what I think happened is I think that they just last minute pulled the plug. They pre-shot everything, watched it, and then Vince was probably like, you know what, I think we should just end on him getting that victory. It feels a little like anticlimactic. It doesn't have the feel that I want without the crowd of like, oh my god, there's gonna be another main event because there's no crowd there to pop for it.
So why can't you just say that? Why can't you just use the match the next day and say it was happening on Raw?
Because I think what they did, they did it on the TakeOver matches were all pre-shot, and then they aired them on NXT and pretended like they were happening that night. But I saw the background say TakeOver, and so all the backgrounds they shot said WrestleMania. So the set, it's because the set said WrestleMania. So I think
you're very
like,
smart.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm
not very bright. I didn't even put that together. It's a very good point by you.
You can never think curbside baptism, but you're a smart guy. But
I'm never coming up with that. No. But by the way, they could have just done another match. Whatever. Anyways, keep going.
You're right.
Yeah, it's also, okay.
It would have been fine. But everything was weird. I mean, have you been checking out the I have a couple questions for you. All right, here's where I'm gonna go. Otis, do you think Otis could be a credible champion? They got pretty much a year to make him a heavyweight, a believable heavyweight champion. You know, he could win the Universal title, which has a little less prestige to it, less lineage. Do you think that within a year you can make Otis a believable champion? Look at this question. It's hurting your brain. It's so good. It's such a good. No, it's actually it is really interesting, right?
I just don't want to say no. I don't want to say no because I think his character is really funny and I think he's really charismatic and entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, he's the Chris Farley of WWE. Like,
that's a great. Yeah. He is the Chris Farley of WWE.
I mean, that's an incredible role to have. Right. And I said this on Cheap Heat a few weeks ago that, like, don't forget, Chris Farley was so good that in his silly movies, there would almost always be like a little dramatic part. And if you actually watch with a discerning eye, he was fucking great actor in those parts. Like Farley could act. He could do everything. And maybe Otis can be that too, where he really does offer sort of depth and his character has a lot. But the problem is from a physique standpoint and from a moveset standpoint, the problem is not that he's a fat guy.
Yeah.
The problem is that he's a short fat guy.
Right.
If he was like 5 inches taller and he brought back the Avalanche, you know?
Yeah.
Well, now I can buy him as a champion. But because he doesn't have a move that makes me think, your move can't be the worm, dude. That's not enough to be a credible champion. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So if they can make some adjustments, then maybe there's a world in which he could be. But at this very moment, I picture him being a guy who could hold the IC title, the tag titles. Hard to picture him holding a world title.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed my main thought, which is that I think they could do it, but he needs to change his wrestling style immediately. It needs to be more, I'm huge, I throw my weight around, and he needs to snap into some kind of vicious version of himself. He could be a lovable teddy bear, but then like once you, not like Festus style, you know what I mean?
Right.
Not like that. But some version of that. Because as it stands right now, what I'm worried about is, and I want to know how you feel about this. I'm worried about him cashing in on the tag titles, or cashing in for like any kind of lower title, like the IC title or something. Because it's not really believable. Like, why would you ever do that? Except for the fact that he's just stupid. But then if his whole thing is he's stupid, it's hard to believe that he could be the WWE champion and just be silly. You know?
And by the way, if he doesn't ever cash in and win the world title,
right?
They threw away both of this year's Money in the Bank briefcases.
I know. Why do they keep doing that? Especially at this time, I'm like, why don't you just keep the case is so exciting. You always keep at least one of them open, right?
Like, I didn't think Asuka should have gotten the title like that. I think the title should have been, if you're going to do it that way, we should have done it before and known the title was on the line.
Right.
Or if not, then Becky should have relinquished the title. They should have determined a number one contenders match.
Right.
And the two number one contenders, fought for it. And then someone else had the briefcase.
Right.
But like, to me, to just be like, look, the title's in the briefcase. So that's over. It's gone.
Right.
We lost the intrigue.
Yeah. And also, especially in a time where you're looking for content, why not hold the tournament? Because like, I'm kind of vested in this IC tournament because I'm like, who's going to be the next IC champion? You got Jeff Hardy, Elias, AJ Styles, Daniel Bryan. It's kind of it can go a bunch of different ways.
And is this going to wrap at Backlash, the IC title tournament?
I don't know if they've announced that for sure, but I probably, right? It'll time out perfectly. That's like 3 weeks from now, and they got they're in the semifinals, so that feels like they can milk that for 2 weeks, right? So I think that would be good.
I'm Googling to see if see what we know about it. But yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah. I think they keep teasing Daniel Bryan. They tease Daniel Bryan as the IC. They always tease Daniel Bryan being like, I'm going to win the tag belts, the IC belt, and I'm going to make it like the best wrestling belt, you know? And I'm always excited for that, but every time it seems to be he's on a different page than booking when it comes to that. But I would think that would be where I would go with it, is like just have Daniel Bryan do kind of open challenges on the IC title. It would be awesome.
I'll tell you this, though. I do pop for the idea of did Hardy and Sheamus have their match yet, or they had a match that wasn't
last night
in the tournament?
At the end of SmackDown? Yeah, no, Hardy won.
Hardy won on Friday. The match that Hardy won Friday was the IC. Mm-hmm. So now we have Hardy. Bryan is excited. For some reason that excites me.
I always pop for Jeff Hardy when they put him in big spots.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Me too. It makes me happy. But like, I don't remember a lot of Daniel Bryan and Jeff Hardy.
I don't. Yeah, me either. I think I dipped out when all that was going down.
But when did it? But when did it happen? Like Daniel Bryan's ascent was when Jeff Hardy was in TNA.
Yeah,
then Jeff came back 3 years ago. Did they have a real story? Do they really have anything since then?
Jeff Daniel Bryan, I don't remember. I don't have any memories of Jeff Hardy Daniel Bryan. I had Jeff Hardy CM Punk, but not right. Jeff Hardy Daniel Bryan.
Is that why I'm popping for it so much? Because I can't even picture them in the ring together.
No,
because that's cool.
That's cool if you have a guy with like demons versus the guy who like eats legumes.
Exactly, the legume champion.
Yeah, I do wish Daniel Bryan was still pushing the Planet Champion gimmick.
It was great. It was great.
I would love a babyface version. You did a great interview with him that I don't think a lot of people saw because I kind of like just caught it where he was full on. I don't remember. This was before WrestleMania 35, right? He was full on in character, and you were asking about the title, and he was explaining how the turquoise, it's naturally found turquoise. It was
it's naturally
straight. Fallen beech wood, right? Like all shit like that. He had an answer.
He worked. He was going so hard. He's so great, man. He just like lives it so hard. Like and at times when you think he could check out just because like he made it to the top. You're talking about a guy who made it to the top, met this amazing – oh, you have the title?
No, what we got done is the cow – we took the cow title and got an eco-friendly version of the cow championship. One of our listeners – Steve Akhmoudi at Stu's Wood took our title, which is a commemorative replica of Big Gold that I spray painted COW on, like NWO style, and then he made a eco-friendly version with removable side plates. Look at that.
Come on.
It's canvas. Oh my god, look at this.
Stu's Wood. By the way, so it's amazing. Should I holler at Stu's Wood about making some 45 crates for me for miniature record crates?
Yeah, he's great. Check him out. Steve Akhmoudi.
Get at me, Steve's.
She made this.
You said Steve's. It's beautiful.
It's the most custom piece you've ever seen. It's got a hoagie in the middle.
That's a phenomenal title.
Yeah. But, yeah, sorry.
No, Brian's amazing. To be a guy who made it to the top against all odds. I've said this 50 times, but whatever. No one listens to my shit. I always say that CM Punk and Daniel Bryan making it to the top the way they did would be the equivalent of if Talib Kweli and Mos Def had ruled hip hop in 2003.
Right.
Like the two like indie darling artists didn't just make it, but became the biggest. That's what CM Punk and Daniel Bryan did. And for Daniel Bryan to make it all the way to the mountaintop and have the WrestleMania 30 moment, meets his dream woman, has a family with her.
Right.
Like, he's done everything you could do, has plenty of money, and then still comes back, and when he comes back, like, actually does great stuff. Yeah, you just got to give him a ton of credit. I love that guy.
It's the best story. All right, couple things before I let you go. I want to make sure I get to a couple things. This Taker doc, you've been watching it? Have you seen it?
Yes, caught up.
I think it's really – I think I had this thought where I was like, this is actually interesting because now I feel like I'm seeing – the darkest version of Undertaker I've ever seen, where the real Taker is a guy who's so fucking hard on himself that I'm like, oh my God, now I feel like I understand kind of the dead man gimmick more than ever. And now it's reinvigorated my interest in Taker in a way that is counterproductive for what he's trying to do, which is retire properly. You know?
It makes you want to see more. You want the ending yeah. more now. Like, yeah, please, absolutely. It makes you want to root for this guy even more. It's a great point. I mean, yeah. to me, my big takeaway from it, I'm not going to say that this is curb stomp baptism levels, but
that's the key. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's the holy grail.
I'm sorry. I interrupted you. Just, I had to, every time you say it, I just think about, you know, what, how did I do that? You know?
No, I know. It's like the flux capacitor, Jace. but for me, what I take away from this is that by him exposing the real Mark Calloway for the first time, this is the piece he needed to get closure.
Oh.
This will be what gives him closure, is that, first of all, he can have a final match where we all know who he really is.
Right.
And it's kind of Mark Calloway's first and last match.
Yeah.
And then, because he's broken sort of the walls down and now he's a regular guy, he can then play a role again in WWE where he talks and shows up and can do things still.
It's amazing. And he needed to do it a long time ago.
It's the best thing.
Not to mention, like, if he's going to have, like, his knees going to pop in the middle of a match, you know, they can kayfabe that and it'll be part of the story. So if he's wrestling and he can't stand up, he doesn't need to pretend that he's 20, which is what he's doing to himself. It's hard to watch. You're like, no, make
the
Dark
old
Knight
man.
Returns Batman, right? Like, everyone loves the broken down Batman who's still trying to do it. That's what we wanted for him for a while. We need to see. I think we need to see Bray retire him. That's what I really want. I really want Bray to take him down.
It would be the perfect. Listen, it would be if we have to get. I mean, this is 100,000 people have died in this country. And I'm still focused on, I mean, we have to get wrestling back to normal. It's important. It's the number one issue facing
the number
our
one
nation.
Because we need a curb stomp baptism in front of at least 20,000 or else.
Exactly.
Is wrestling anything?
We need to build back towards Mania in LA. We need LA Mania to be the best Mania of all time. And we need the build up to be in front of a crowd. And because if you build that the right way, And Bray retires Undertaker in front of 80,000 at the new stadium in LA, it would be.
Oh my God.
And I would hope that before that you have him have, I would have him have another Boneyard match before then.
Oh yeah. Boneyard matches galore, right? I mean,
every 3 months. Give me one every 3 months.
Yeah. That's what he's doing now. If you want to wrestle Taker, you got a gripe with the dead man, you meet him at the Boneyard. You know what I mean?
That's it. And then Bray can be the one who lures him out, and they can't agree to Firefly or Boneyard. Mm-hmm. So guess what? They have to have it at the stadium.
Oh my God, that's amazing! That's how you do that. They can't agree on which concept match to do, so they just.
Firefly Funhouse. No, I want Boneyard. No. The writers can't agree. We're not going to do it. We're going to do it at the stadium.
Right, and then you could start saying Taker. We could start seeing Michelle McCool being like, his knee's fucked up. Like, he's not in good shape, but I'm telling him not to show up. He's not coming. I'm not allowing him to come. Gung. Oh, actually, I could do that. And then you're like, he's not coming. And then, he's here.
It'll always work.
Yeah, that's going to be great. All right, well, Peter, before you go, I want to bring up one last thing here on the pod. Because my listeners want me to mention this, which is that I had to on the Cheap Heat podcast, it was mentioned that my name came up in the terms of the JWO, which is your friend group.
That's right.
Zach Linder had mentioned that I was the Jeff Jarrett. He had mentioned that I was the Jeff Jarrett of the NWO.
Of the JWO.
I'll tell you, funny thing about the JWO is that was the name of my high school. My high school friends were all the JWO as well, because we were all Jewish kids into wrestling.
I think Dipperstein might have also done the same thing at camp. But anyways, keep going.
Yeah, we got hats made at one of those kiosks in the mall, you know, with
yeah.
the lowercase
oh, yeah.
J.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Wait, so you actually went a step further than we did.
Step further than it was. But
yeah, good job.
So I just wanted to say, for the record that, listen, I'm proud to be the Jeff Jarrett. I'll gladly wear the black and silver, okay? I'll hang out with Brett. If I could be in the presence of Bret Hart, I mean, you know what I mean? In 2000, I think that I think it was the best iteration of the NWO was 2000 NWO, and I'm glad to be part of the black and silver. And as a matter of fact, I'm changing the black and silver to the LaCroix print.
By the way, I need to introduce you to Brian Mann.
Yeah.
If you love 2000 wrestling, I mean, this man believes that the Greed pay-per-view is one that should be viewed. I mean, he loves everything. He had a podcast called Keep It 2000, only about 2000 WCW. That's
hilarious.
It is so repugnant.
It's funny. Now I'm coming up with amazing booking, curb stomp baptism, maybe. WWE will, you know, we'll get hip to this brilliance one day. But I mean, when I remember when I was watching WCW towards the end, I mean, I was always a WWF guy. You know, I was hardcore defender of WWF. And now I say why I'm a big supporter of AEW is because I completely took WCW for granted. When we had we had another company that had funds and could be on a proper network. And
I relate to that concept 100%. Like, you missed out, so now you want to enjoy everything that exists.
That's right. I agree. So I won't besmirch any era of NWO because all at this point, in hindsight, all NWO is great NWO. I would take it back today. So that's it. So I'm happy to be at all. I'll take that. Or I could be just like the DDP. You know what I mean? Just fucking do my own.
By the way, you could totally be DDP. And how old are you, Dan?
36.
Well, you have
I'm
like
the same age
years.
As WrestleMania.
That's right. I forgot about that. I knew that.
That's all I know. All that. Yeah.
You have like 5 years to become DDP. Like, I don't think he even hit his prime till his early 40s.
No, absolutely.
I still sometimes think about that. I'm like, oh, if I started learning right now, I could still have a DDP run. If I could just get into incredible shape right now, I could go for a good 5 or 6 years. But now it's getting close that even by DDP standards,
that is so funny. I do that same math all the time. I go, you know, and I trained for like 4 weeks one time. If I was doing a Funny or Die series where it was like a comedian just tries to be a pro wrestler, which they pulled the plug on properly because I was getting hurt.
Did anything come from it? Like, did you get anything done?
I got 4 episodes of it, which is pretty fun. I got Ziggler in one of the episodes.
But they didn't put it out?
No, they didn't put it out. But I had access. I could send you.
I want to see it. Yeah, I want to see him.
It was. I was working out a gimmick. My gimmick was at the time. My gimmick was white privilege, and I would complain about I'm not wrestling in certain temperatures. I need the temperature lowered,
that is phenomenal. That's really, really good.
Like, I would refuse to wrestle. You know what I mean? I'd just be like, the conditions need to be absolutely perfect. Anyway, so what I'm saying is that, listen, I would like to say that I'm proud to be the Jeff Jarrett, if it will. Absolutely. Anyway, Peter, I'm going to let you go. Thank you for coming on.
I enjoyed this.
Comedians of Wrestling podcast. No, it was great marking out with you. I feel like we only had one other wrestling discussion at Dipperstein's. We had a nice time there.
We did. It was a great moment watching the AEW pay-per-view while Dipperstein was asleep.
He was sleeping right next to us.
Yes, right? Completely. And I would be like, "Hey, Dipper, you watch this?" And he'd go, "Yeah."
What was that? We were watching Full Gear, right?
Yeah,
we were watching Full Gear.
By the way, this was the second Double or Nothing, correct?
Yes, Double or Nothing last year was in Vegas.
It's like weird to me. Double or Nothing to me only made sense as being the name of like the second pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Because wasn't it All In? Mm. Was it All In, then Double or Nothing, then All Out or whatever?
They did All In, and then Double or Nothing was their follow-up pay-per-view to be like, listen, if we can't sell out again, then that was all for nothing. And it's in Vegas.
I found it weird that this year was just called Double or Nothing again. I was like still in the story from, I was like, I don't, but this is, I guess it's the same as like Backlash being Backlash every year.
Yeah, it should have been just, it just Triple or Nothing or something, right?
Right, or yeah. or Double or Nothing 2020. I don't know. That part did confuse me. But that said, I enjoyed myself. We should watch some wrestling on Zoom sometime. I'm doing that.
I would love to do it. I would love to do it. So so everyone, thanks Peter Rosenberg coming on. I mean, you have a million things to plug, but if you're listening to this, the main thing is check out Cheap Heat podcast, a great wrestling podcast. And dude, thanks for being here and keep watching wrestling.
Yeah, you keep watching it too. Thanks,
keep watching wrestling. All right, at Curbstop Baptism, bring that up on Cheap Heat.
All right. I know I will. I'm going to bring it up this week.
Yeah, bring it up. All right. All see right. you, bro.
Later, Jeff. Bye.
Comedians of wrestling. I listen up
Wednesday.
When I go to work.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.